A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Day 3 of the Cannes Film Festival, and this is the second special Truth in Movies podcast from the Croisette. As you may know, we've suspended usual broadcasting in favour of bringing you reactions and gossip and news from the world's biggest film festival. It's Michael Leader here, sitting across from head honcho of Little White Lies, David Jenkins.
Hey there.
We're sunning ourselves here on the balcony. I've literally only been here 24 hours, David, and already I'm in the Cannes spirit.
Me too. Although we're not quite on the balcony as we were last time, because we got a few people saying that there was too much ambient sea noise and laughter and joy in the background.
So we're balcony adjacent.
We're moving inside a little bit just so you can hear our dulcet tones a bit clearer, I guess.
Well, all shade is good for me as a gingerhead man.
But no, I'm in the spirit. Had a few glasses of rosé. I'm happy. Not today. Mm-hmm. In the past 2 days in the evenings at normal time that you would have rosé.
Mm-hmm. So. And I've had gelato, which you can enjoy any hour of the day.
Exactly.
Maybe many hours.
Breakfast, mainly, yes.
But already I've managed to fit in two films, although you're way ahead of me so far, David. Let's cover one that we've both seen this morning, which is a competition film, Leto, directed by Kirill Serebrennikov, a filmmaker who, he's 5 or 6 films into his career now, right? The last one was The Student, and now he's back with this biopic of the Russian rock scene in the early 80s.
Yeah, it's a strange beast, this one. It might be worth adding as well that the context of the screening is that the director is currently under house arrest in in Russia.
Oh.
And has not been able to attend the festival. And at the gala premiere, which happened last night, people were holding a big sign of his name, and the festival tried to get him over, but was denied in the end. It's weird because, like, although this film, you know, it's about the 80s, it's about Russia, it's about kind of censorship in the world of rock music and the punk scene, and how those two kind of things can exist together, I guess. But it does it in a very kind of loosey-goosey way. It's not like you don't come away from it thinking, oh my God, this is a horrendous critique of the withering satire of corruption or whatever. And
exactly. It's this bizarre film. It's the sort of film we are probably familiar with for Western music. I've seen the words 24-hour party people thrown around, Maybe I'm Not There, films about Western musicians. We come to this film with, I don't know about you, David, I know nothing about the Russian rock scene, the underground rock scene in the 80s, so this could have been fictional characters for me. But it plays with myth and nostalgia and the coming together of various musical styles and the anxiety of influence from the West in quite an interesting way, but without context, does it really add up to anything?
It's a little bit whimsical, and as a film, it's kind of shapeless. I mean, you have this kind of indie rocker. He looks like Pete Doherty, wearing like massive aviator shades. Would you say Pete Doherty?
Pete Doherty.
Or maybe someone out of Primal Scream. And then he kind of takes this younger Damo Suzuki-like character under his wing, who plays this kind of very quirky sort of guitar indie pop, and I think that there's this kind of mutual appreciation of each other's music, and the sort of what rock deity takes the young upstart under his wing, and the film just sort of ambles on, and it's just lots of scenes, and there's these dream sequences, and there's some really quite bad musical interludes with kind of sing-along versions of songs like Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads, and The Passenger by Iggy Pop.
Exactly. All the Young Dudes as well. All the Young Dudes. Motley Hoople.
And the one that, yeah, is was very, very bad, I thought, was the when they chose to do Lou Reed's Perfect Day.
Ah, yes.
That was like, it reminded me of that old BBC ad. In a good way.
Not in a good way.
Yeah.
Some of us think of that quite fondly, that BBC ad. But it's a funny one, and diving into Wikipedia afterwards, you find out that the two musicians at the centre of the film and the two bands they form, which are Mike forms a band called Zoo Park, and Victor, who's the Dame Suzuki-like character you mentioned, forms Kino, and they are basically the centre of this huge scene that rises up in the 80s and burns out in the early 90s in Russia. And with that information, maybe we could have got more from the film, but maybe is the film too loose and baggy to really have that point anyway. What I liked about it was it reminded me a lot of Velvet Goldmine, the Todd Haynes film, which has a quite an ambivalent approach to heroism and rock legend and myth. We have this recurring chorus-like character who pops up saying, you know, almost castigating the characters for not having more of a political spine or being more experimental with their music or more, you know, fervent on stage. But it's a bizarre film. I need to ruminate this a bit longer. That's the problem with Cannes, is that already we're onto something else.
Exactly, yeah. One issue that I had as well is that it's got this, in the middle of it all is this love triangle as well, Victor and Mike are both, they're kind of in love with the same woman, which mm-hmm. happens to be Mike's partner, with whom he has a child. And she's very kind of a passive presence in the film, and sort of, you know, she sort of flits between the two guys, and yeah, just, I really would have liked a sort of stronger female presence in the mm-hmm. film, really, than someone who's very just subservient to the needs of the rock gods and the lyric writers and these guys who are creating serious art and mm-hmm. you know, tearing up the rule books and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, not a full success for me either.
And that was Leto, the Serebrennikov competition film, which is only the second competition film I've seen. Last night, the first film I saw was Yamadeen, this Egyptian film directed by A.B. Shawki, which was a strange way to start the festival for me, really, because it's a very sweet film. It's this almost road movie. The main character, played by Radhi Gamal, who I presume is a non-actor or a first-time actor, he's a man with leprosy, and he's playing a leper in the film, and it's a sort of state-of-the-nation road trip where he goes around, tools around Egypt to go to find the family that gave him up for adoption to this colony that he spent his life. But along the way, comes up against various prejudices and various other characters that he meets. And it seemed very, I don't know, after school special for me, really. It's something, when you come to Cannes, you expect films of great import or films that make great statements, but it felt very cosy.
It lacked a certain artistry, I would mm-hmm. say, this one. It didn't really. It's a very kind of wears its sort of sentimental side on its sleeve mm-hmm. very much, and there is a lot of kind of low hanging fruit there that it kind of grabs at. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got this kind of cute young kid, and he there's a bit where he has an accident, and Bechet has to like get him to a hospital, and there's all this confusion, mm-hmm. and it's very much played like long lingering shots of him looking sad and mm-hmm. wondering how he's going to like work things out, and you also have many people in the background characters who will just sort of point and laugh at him and call him a freak, and I believe the title is actually translated to Beast, which is the nickname given to Bechet when he was young, first developing the disease. But yeah, it's very syrupy, and it's one of my most hated things actually, and I think it might be a sort of term that has developed more recently in the kind of world of film criticism. It's feel good.
Yeah.
And when you describe a film as feel good, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, generally someone who is in a sort of place of disadvantage overcomes a problem mm-hmm. or an issue, and it's got that kind of feel good vibe to it, and added to which, enhanced by this kind of very overbearing score.
Really overbearing, yes. Whenever there's a shot of a landscape, it is this great adventurous score, or whenever there's a shot of great emotional import, there's syrup is dripping from the speakers. I'd like to suggest, if we're going to be suggesting any special awards going forward for the festival, we know the Palme Dog is something that's given every year for canine actors. This film has a good contender for the Palme Donkey.
The Palme Donkey, yes.
Harvey the Donkey is very cute and gives him a pretty affecting performance.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's not quite the most affecting in the film. That would probably be a bit brutal. But yeah, no, this has got some excellent donkey performing in it. Yeah, Palm Donkey contender.
Sure. Maybe even uncontended. Yeah. But, so what else have you seen so far, David?
So just picking up two films that I've seen that are playing in slightly non-competition slots. One in the In Certain Regards slot of interest is called Rafiki. It's a first-time Kenyan film. The first time a Kenyan film has ever been in the official selection in Cannes. It's already been banned in Kenya because of its subject matter, which is a very sweet, again, that word, saccharine, teen romance between two young female teenagers.
Right.
I guess it's an important film in the way that it is broaching this very kind of taboo subject, and the twist is that you have these two local politicians who are fighting an election against each other, and it's their daughters who have fallen in love with each other. So you've got that kind of, you know, these rivals being brought together in this kind of strange, unexpected way. The director is named Wanuri Kahui, a Kenyan director, female, and she I mean, it's an impressive first film. I think she's got a really good eye for colour, framing, and just capturing the beauty of the landscape, and just filming people. I mean, the two lead actresses are just, they sort of look great in every single shot. But the script is a little bit kind of clunky, and the sort of the way it goes. I mean, you can pretty much, from the first kind of tentative glance across the street when the lovers, the would-be lovers, clap eyes on each other, you can kind of fill in the dots from there, really.
Right.
But it's a really nice little film, and I would expect it to, you know, travel quite far, because it's got a certain power to it, even though it's a bit rough around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just saw another film called To the Ends of the Earth, and that was in the director's Fortnite strand, which is kind of about 10-15 minutes past the main Palais where all the competition films are screened at in the director's Fortnite. It's a film called To the Ends of the Earth by Guillaume Nico, French filmmaker. It's a really dark and brutal kind of horror war film set in the years following the Second World War in sort of French-occupied Indochina. It's about a soldier who witnesses his brother and sister-in-law mutilated by a Vietnamese general or a kind of this kind of mystical character, a bit like Colonel Kurtz. And he's thrown into a mass grave, believed to be dead, but he's actually survives and crawls out and vows this vengeance. And it's him rejoining the French army over there and attempting to locate this guy. And it's lots of like gore, lots of beheadings, lots of graphic sex. I mean, there was a very funny moment in the screening where the sort of elderly French couple who had obviously sort of taken a gamble on this one because Gerard Depardieu has a small role in it as a kind of, the main character goes to Depardieu so Depardieu fills in the plot for him, so. There's a graphic sex scene, and as soon as it came up on the screen, this French couple just uttered to one another, "Ah non!" very loudly, and everyone laughed around them, which was very charming.
But that's a good Cannes moment there.
Yes.
So, what's we got coming up, or what news have we got today? Any Cannes gossip, any Cannes headlines?
Well, I guess the big thing is that the new Terry Gilliam film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, was in flux whether it was going to actually play or not in the festival due to a lawsuit over rights and ownership. But it seems that yesterday it was called in favour of the festival, so the film will be playing. And also there was weird, slightly sort of strange news of Gilliam himself suffering a small stroke over the weekend, but apparently he is now
right
as rain,
raring,
and has posted pictures of himself jumping around in an English country garden, so that will be happening.
Sounds good. And actually Harby might have some contention there for the Palm Donkey.
Exactly. And yeah, so we've got coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the new Pavel Palikowski film Cold War, which is a romance set in kind of across Europe in the years following the Second World War. And then we're going to talk about a film called Petra by Jaime Rosales.
So Jaime Rosales, maybe?
Jaime Rosales.
You talk about director's Fortnite. I'm going down there later tonight to watch that film. So a bit off the beaten path, but highly recommended.
I don't know really anything about it, so I'll be keen to hear about that. So,
yeah. So we'll check in tomorrow on those films. Thank you for listening. Any comments, please let us know on Twitter at LWLies or at truthandmovies@tcolondon.com. And as always, this has been a 7digital production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.